What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of the Meyrin Podcast. Today, my guest is Quinn Wolferman. Quinn is a pro skier from Montana. He made his name through the years starring in Slush Games, Level 1 Super Unknown 13, and many other edits and movies. Through the years, Quinn also climbed up the ranks of comp skiing, eventually competing in World Cups and missing out on the 2018 Olympic by one spot on the mighty US team. In the past couple years, while still competing at X Games and winning a gold medal in the 2022 Knucklehawk competition, Quinn has put his focus into the film aspect of the sport. Following his 2021 Peep the Game segment with the Slush crew, he joined Torin Yeader Wallace and the Deviate crew last season to put together a banger POW segment for their new movie Chameleon. In this episode, we talked about it all. His youth, competing, the Slush Games, joining Armada Skis, X Games, filming with Deviate, and much, much more. This episode is presented by Armada Skis. Armada was founded by OGs of the sport who wanted to create a brand entirely focused on free skiing. 20 years later, the brand remains true to its founding principles, with its all-star team mixing legends like Casabon, Harlow, Tanner Hall, Torin Yeader Wallace, Mike Hornbeck, Sammy Carlson, and also with the next-gen bosses like Olivier Asselin, Daniel Backer, Kura Koivisto, and the man Quinn Wolferman. They also stay true to their roots with their pro model lineups and their super dope innovation lab that puts out insane skis like the game-changing B-Dog Edgeless or the super playful Stranger. I've had many Armada skis through the years and I've loved them all. They're super fun, durable skis with the dopest graphics. Check out their full 2023 skis and outerwear lineup at armadaskis.com or at your local ski shop. Support companies who support skiing. Support Armada skis. Shout out to the patrons on Patreon, Will Cameron, Raf Diaz, Laurent-Olivier Martin, Holden Baldassi, Ryan Bruninghaus, Sam Chef, and Nick Gosling. Also, big thanks to the sponsors, Armada Skis, Planks Clothing, Dick Hans Restaurants, and Axis Board Shop. Let's go! Mr. Quinn Wolferman, welcome to the podcast.
Xavier, thank you. Appreciate it. Happy to be here.
How's it going?
Super good. It's snowing. Snowing a lot in Utah. One of the best years in probably 5 or 6 years. So,
you're in Salt Lake right now, Park City?
Park City, yeah.
And you told me you spent a bit of time in Revelstoke this season.
Yes.
How's that been?
It was good.
Powder Quinn?
Yeah. Powder Quan is on. It was good. Sneaky little trip up north. Got shown around a little bit by Sammy, which was an honor. And yeah, it was amazing to be up there with him. And I spent a lot of time in Canada last year with Torin and Kimbo. So it was nice to get back there. I feel very homey there. So
you're a bit younger than me. So I don't know what's your vision on Sammy, but to me, he's like one of the GOATs, like top five GOATs.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
How was it like getting to spend time with the BC King?
It was good. It was fast paced. I learned a lot already in such a short amount of time. I just was going up there with the intent to kind of just be a sponge and soak a bunch of shit up and... that's exactly what I did. So it was super good. It was nice to just kind of take a little bit of a back seat and just kind of watch how it goes down and just learn, absorb. I feel like you almost don't even realize how much you're really learning in those moments. And then you kind of step back from them and, really digest what you did learn. And it makes it so much more exciting.
Were you guys touring or sledding? What was the
little
vibe?
A little bit of walking, a little bit of sledding, mainly. Yeah, I like snowmobile access a lot, but it was good to get out and do some touring laps as well. And yeah, mainly on the sleds, I think. A couple days walking.
Is it different though, like the terrain and the approach, if you're doing one or another?
I would say the approach is just a little bit different. Like you could kind of like your approach when touring, you're kind of like on the slope looking at what you're going to ski maybe. Whereas sledding, you kind of just like roll up to the bottom, and then you have to just like find a route on the sled, and hopefully there's a way up, which I really enjoy both aspects, honestly.
Because to me, outside of the skiing, it seems like touring is like so much more of a energy draining thing. Like the whole process of going up versus dropping. Maybe I'm wrong though.
If you're not careful, you'll be the most tired person you've ever been after a morning of trying to get out to the zone on a sled. Because if you're not dialed and you get stuck, you'll be sweating, your goggles are fogged, you're late, you're shoveling out your sled because you don't even know why, and you're stuck before you even know it. And that happened to so many people, me included, especially even in Canada. I got stuck a couple of days that were like perfect, and I was like, no, you know.
Yeah.
You actually use so much energy and time getting the sled out versus touring. Usually it's pretty smooth sailing, but yeah, it's touring's an energy suck as well, but mainly to the legs. Whereas sledding is legs and upper body is super tiring.
And when you get stuck, is it like putting you behind 1 hour, or it's basically like you're fucking up your whole day?
No, it's definitely not your whole day. And it just depends on how like much you're like working at it, I guess. But
yeah,
or how bad you get stuck. Sometimes it can be really bad just depending on the situation you get in. Like one day last year, Torin and I were kind of like pushing, and the whole squad really. And then Torin went to go check something out. Went down this gully. It was way too steep. He got bucked, broke his throttle off of his snowmobile, and it was super stuck. And so, I mean, that was one of those days where it was just like, it wasn't anybody's fault. It just happened like that. And, you know, we all had to like climb down there on our feet, and he had wire luckily and was able to repair his throttle and stuff. But like, that was one of those days that was like not a day ruiner, but it just slowed the program down by an hour or two. And then I ended up getting destroyed on the sled as well. Like full, like, I don't even know what you would call it, almost like mousetrap, like over the bars, smashed my face off the front of the sled and then like flipped over it. And that was only like 30 minutes later. And so everybody was kind of just like, all right, let's just not do anything today. It's not our day.
Yeah. Knowing, yeah. Kind of messages from above that today's not the day.
Yeah, for sure.
Talking about Torin and his screwed sled, do you kind of have to be a good mechanic to be able to survive?
Some people wrench better than others. I would say I'm not even the best, not even great at it at all. Torin, I'm getting a little better though. I got a drill now and a new tool set and stuff, which is good. But Torin definitely likes wrenching on stuff.
You need to have that one guy in the crew that'll help you out.
Definitely.
So that's not you?
I can help for sure. I'm a really good helping hand, but I'm not the guy who's like, hey, me, like the, you know, this tool and this tool and this tool, and then burr, burr, burr. I'm like, yeah, I got you. I'll help you.
What's the vibe? Is it like going off knowledge, or like do you open YouTube and are like, how to repair a Polaris, whatever?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. You got to be willing to, you definitely got to be willing to do some research, but you also, I think as time goes on, you just probably get more and more acquainted with that equipment and whatnot.
You've been doing a bit of BC with Sammy this year. Last year, you put out a full part that was almost 100% POW.
Yep.
How's the POW life? What made you go into the POW life? We've seen kind of a bit of a transition in the last couple of years of you doing more and more. What's calling you to the POW?
Yeah. I mean, first off, I love that. And I didn't really realize, like, with where I'd grown up and just kind of where I ended up growing up skiing and everything, how much I was actually sharpening my sword to kind of be able to transition into that and have it feel hopefully as seamless as possible. Because I grew up no park, so I ended up just ripping the mountain all the time, pretty much up until I was like 15, where I was able to start traveling and stuff. And
yeah. And where was that? What, like, mountain?
It's called Snowball. It's in Missoula, Montana. Okay. I grew up there, and there was used to only be two lifts on the mountain and then a T-bar. But there's so much access off it. So I think it was always kind of in me. And then I was able to go ski park and do that for a good bit of time. And then finally, I had a little voice in the back of my head that I didn't really listen to for a couple of years on just that was what I wanted to do. I knew that I wanted to film more. I knew that that was kind of an avenue I really wanted to take. And so, yeah, like you said, it was kind of a slow process. Got a snowmobile, used that for a couple of years, just kind of like getting my foot in the door. And
because it definitely seems harder to get into than, say, street.
Yeah. Like,
if you want to go skiing street, you don't necessarily need the winch or, you know, heavy stuff. You find a spot with natural speed and you're ready to go. Whereas with POW, it seems like you can't just go in there, or, you know, that's dangerous. You need the right tools. You need the right people. You need the right learning before.
Yeah, it's definitely a buy-in. Like, you have to really want to invest yourself into it. And you just have to kind of get to this point of no return. Like, you buy the sled, you take the AVI courses, you know, you get with the right people. It's definitely a challenge, but that's why I loved last season, because I actually felt like for the first time in my skiing that I was almost at work, which was super weird.
In a good sense or a bad sense?
In a good sense, I really liked it. Like, I really liked like waking up early in the morning and being like, all right, like, we're getting to work. Like, you got a long commute. You enjoy that. You get your mind right. You know, sometimes you're stressing, sometimes you're not. It just depends. Like, most of the time you're just super stoked, leave it all behind and you just go out. But yeah, I mean, I felt like I was working, you know, my days were super long. You're building a lot. There's a lot of moments where you're not that stoked actually to be still, you know, 40 minute sled from the car and you're so tired and it's getting dark and you're completely soaking wet and you're like over it. So, but it was super fulfilling for me at the end of the day. But yeah, big buy-in on the POW, on the POW side of things.
And now it's time for a first sponsor break. I love Planck's Clothing. I've been using their gear for 3 seasons now, and I only have great things to say. Great, stylish products that get the job done whether I'm skiing on the hill or filming street with the boys. Their new Powder Hungry gear just dropped online. The Yeti series is a collection of 3-layer shell apparel designed for serious freeride skiers. The Yeti series is durable, high-performance gear. All products in the series are made using Reprieve polyester, which is recycled from post-consumer waste plastic bottles. Also, the Men's Charger 3-layer jacket, which received the Blister Recommended Award in the 22-23 Winter Buyer's Guide, is now available in purple and black, with existing styles now also restocked. Shop now at planksclothing.com. Support companies who support skiing. Support Planck's Clothing. But congrats on that segment, dude. That's one of my favorites from this year.
Thank you.
Rewatching it, like, I love it how, like, you're a super good park skier with, you know, a big bag of tricks of grabs and variation of spin and all that. And it showed in the segment that you know how to ski.
Thank you.
Like, you weren't doing a road sev and then, like, trying to survive your way out. Or maybe you were, but it was looking good.
Yeah, I definitely felt like I was trying to survive my way out of a few things. But at the same time, like I said, like, that's what I was comfortable with growing up. And I figured out how to ski out of shit, high speed, sketchy, with terrible conditions. So getting into there was like, oh, this is actually, you know, not so bad. But I was terrified on a couple of things. I also feel like this year I'm going to be a lot more scared going bigger and faster, probably. So,
which do you have one specific shot that was scary? Like, because you said you were terrified sometimes.
Yeah. One was there was this jump in Sealy Lake, and there's no bottom angle of it in the movie, but I posted the bottom angle on Instagram that Kimbo filmed on the iPhone. And it was just this jump that we hit, and you couldn't really, like, see into it off the end of the lip. You were, like, kind of looking, It was just into like this big gully, and you could tell that there was kind of a waterfall to the right. There was like some frozen ice, and it just was kind of, if you go too far left, you'll hit a pillow and you'll just like bounce into the oblivion. And if you go too far right, it's like a rock wall. Mm. And then there was just a gut. So you just had to really be on point skiing out of there, and you kind of had to take like a hard right turn. So the jump itself was like a pretty nice mellow jump, but then you just like flew into the step down gully area, and yeah, the ride out was, you got to be on it. So
yeah, it's more not the trick necessarily, but all the things that you don't want to happen, or that, you know, all the things that can happen that you need to watch out for.
Yeah, I mean, you just have to honor those things and know that they're there, but also tell yourself in your brain that you just have to act like they don't exist, in a sense, like honor them, no, but then also be like, but I'm not going that way. I'm not going anywhere near that. I'm going to land here. And you have to try to do that as best you can.
But yeah, I really love the vibe. There was something in it, like almost an Adam DeLorme vibe. In some shots, not that you're not like him, like you're your own guy, but there's that one shot like of you going super big straight air tapping a tree, and I was like, oh, that's some Adam DeLorme shit.
Yeah, he didn't have to do the craziest tricks to make them look so good, like that big nollie off that mine shaft out in Colorado. Yeah, he's a huge inspiration, so that is a great compliment.
You said you grew up skiing a lot of resort / pow, not necessarily park.
Mm-hmm.
Was that something you were more into, watching movies? Or were you a park?
No, I was a park rat. I would skip pow segments. I'd be like, game, skip, you know.
Has that changed now?
Yeah, you know, I feel like I should be watching more skiing, but I find my inspiration elsewhere. I still keep up on everything, and I'll watch it at least once or twice. But I think that was like a hard thing for me, actually, when I was younger, was feeling like now I'm the person who is wanting to put stuff out that inspires people, versus me being able to consume all the media that was super inspiring. So it was kind of like a weird point in my career when I realized, like, it's not that I didn't have anybody to look up to, but it was kind of like, I think that I'm kind of in a place where I have to be the guy that is hopefully doing those tricks that people can look up to.
You're that guy now?
Hope so.
Well, definitely.
Dude,
I was, it might be a branch off subject, but let's go. I was watching, you know, videos of you, and I think I said the same thing to Max Moffat, like trying to say, like, where did it start? Like, where did I learn about you? And I think it might be the case for a lot of people. It's the slush games. Like, best. Dude, there's some games of you with like close to 200,000 views.
Shout out to Joss and Slush.
Shout out to Joss. But anyways, to say, like, I'm sure there's a lot of people looking up to you because you're a sick gear to watch with your own personality. You got sick style, sick tricks. And you've been like, I think the oldest slush games of you are like around 2017.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. It's so crazy. Actually, that was like, to me, that was competing. You know, I liked skiing like a slope style and stuff, but the fact that I could look at someone in the face and like tell them what I was going to do,
mm-hmm,
and vice versa, and have to do that, it felt so much more personal to me.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a one-on-one game of basketball, which I liked so much more than being like, okay, there's 90 other competitors here, so, you know, I'm just going to do my run. It didn't really feel like a contest, where in the slush game, it's so personal. And
it's such a good format. What I always tell people, or at least that's my opinion, is what makes you like a skier is more than like a big air trick. It's, you know, are you attached to them? Like, do you like their personality, and do you vibe with their style as a person, you know, in addition to their skiing? And slush was good for that, because in between the rounds or the games or the trick calling, you kind of learned about the guy a bit more than just like, here's my Instagram shot of me doing a four on.
Yeah, that was another thing I loved about Slush is, yeah, the personality shows through so well. Like, you can definitely tell who has a good attitude, who just wants to be a savage, who's a little bit funny when they ski. You know, like, for example, Ferdy, like, watching him play a game of Slush, he's just like a little kid at a playground, like, smiling, having a good time.
Yeah.
It's like having so much fun. And then there's other people who are just like complete savages and like want to tear your throat out and like don't actually care like if you can even do the trick. And that's what's so dope about Slush is you can really like get to see through that. But going back to what you said though is I think I get recognized from Slush games the most. Like people will come up to me and older dudes or totally random people, snowboarders, be like, yeah, watch your Slush games. Like, so the YouTube algorithm is definitely doing its job. If you're listening to this now, go watch the game of Henrik and I again, because I think that'll be, I think I need, we need like 170,000 more views and it's at 1 million.
Damn.
So I would like to see a Slush game get to 1 million views.
Wait, I have the tab right now. Yeah, you're close to 900,000. So you only need 100.
Yeah, so dude, run that up. I would love to see a Slush game get 1 million views. And
is that the most viewed of all time?
I don't know, because they were doing them on Vimeo for a while. And McEachran and Russ Henshaw had, like, in my opinion, one of the craziest games ever super early in the Slush days. And then I think there's some games of Jesper that are, like, super, super high views because he's
right
as well.
And maybe some with Emil and Hugo. I don't know if they have that much views, but they were crazy. They were insane.
Gotta have a ton of views. All three of those rounds were like the year before I ever played my first Slush game, that their first Kimbo game came out, and I obsessively watched it. I was obsessed. I thought that was the sickest game ever. Those kids are crazy. I love them both.
You talked quickly about some people were savages.
Mm.
Who's the savagest you've ever played against?
That I've ever played against?
Yeah.
I don't know if I've played Colby in a cup, but we had a game at Park City. It was probably my first Slush game, and he was, you know, super fun to play against, and I've seen him hold his own against, like, Vinny Cash, too. A-Hall, he was a tough game to get to play Henrik.
And now it's time for another sponsor break. Dick Ann's is a family-owned fast food restaurant chain with 12 locations in the Montreal region. Close to 70 years after opening their first restaurant on Montreal's Boulevard Pinneuf, Dick Ann's is still focused on what matters, the same great menu with great food made with quality ingredients. I've said it, I'm a Dick Ann's super fan, and many people ask me what's my go-to. I have to say it's their famous Wally Burger, a double cheeseburger with slices of pepperoni. It's so good. Dick Ann's is now selling their sauce in their restaurants and in many Metro grocery stores throughout Quebec. Plus, they've put a bunch of great recipes to go along with it on their website at dickannssauce.com. Also big news, their Saint-Jérôme location is reopened. Same location, brand new building. Go check them out when you pass by Saint-Jérôme. Support companies who support skiing. Support Dick Ann's restaurants.
I think for outside viewers, Vinny Cash seems like the most savage. Like, it gets to him and he's like, front flip blunt, or you know, something that he's the only one that does it
for sure. Dude, I would have never done a screaming semen out of a rail land in screaming semen if I wasn't playing Vinny Cash, and he mopped me up, dude.
Did you get it?
I did do it, but I lost that game super fast. That was maybe my worst performance ever in a Slush game, was against Vinny Cash. He totally mopped me up, and I was like, well, I mean, yeah, he got me good. Yeah, dude.
He's a good for that type of games because he can do the classic tricks. So he'll like match up what you do. And once it's his set, you're like, oh, fuck.
I know. He's so gnarly, dude. He's so good. And the way his brain works on skis is unlike anybody else.
I remember I was filming with him way back in the days when he was still like up and comer.
Mm-hmm.
And like we were with some Quebec friends, like people were trying their first dubs, like mm-hmm. you know, trying dub 10, dub 12s, and he was out there like doing bio 16s.
Yeah. I know. I remember there was this JOI video of Vinny Cash to some like super hard French rap when he was like probably still a teenager, and he was doing like switch bio 14 octos and like just super crazy stuff. And yeah, that's when I remember being pretty hyped on Vinny Cash.
Yeah. But I think something that's also really cool about Slush is a lot of times I've seen that so much through the years. Like, you know, someone is good, but it's, it, you know, you can claim all you want that, Quinn is better than Colby, or A-Hall is better than, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But that's one of the only times when you can really see a face-to-face. Because in a slope run, say the two guys might do different rail tricks and jump tricks, and at the end of the day, it's different. But in the Slush game, it's like, okay, head-to-head. And you've played against some of the best there is. You've had games with Henrik, with Belmar, with A-Hall, with Ferdy, Vinny Cash, Colby Stevenson, Cody LaPlante, Hunter S., Hugo Burval.
Yeah, that's crazy to put it into perspective, you know. A lot of good skiers.
Dude.
It's been a lot of fun. It was nice to play Ferdy again last year. He was out here right around this time, and we played a Slush game, and I was nervous. It's so sick to get, like the call and then be like, yeah, you guys want to play a game of Slush? And you could easily turn it down, you know? But there's something inside of me that's like, all right, you know, let's go. Try to, like, just put on a good show. That's why I like it, too, just the show.
Yeah, because there's also a risk of getting injured in those. Like, someone makes you try a trick you're not comfortable with, or, that, you know, there's always that factor, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I haven't thought much about that. I try not to think about that. I just try not to think about it, you know, but that has been like a big contingency point with a lot of people, is they'll be like, I don't want to play Slush because I don't want to get hurt doing someone else's tricks, which I totally get. But at the same time, if you're confident in your bag, then you should be good.
Yeah. Well, these things apply in anything, I guess. Like, I would like to film Street, but I don't want to get hurt.
I do understand that, though, because skiing Street is so gnarly, dude. And so, like, if I were to go out and hit a street spot and get played, knowing that I wanted to go excel in the POW, mm-hmm. I would be pretty bummed, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you just have to weigh out what's worth it to you.
Yeah, exactly. And it relates back to Slush, where you've seen people, like, lose a game with an ender trick that they're not comfortable with, and they're like, I'm not doing it.
For sure. And honestly, that's commendable. That's like someone pulling out of a tennis match for like mental health issues or something, you know. They just don't feel comfortable. It's like, why ruin your season on a Slush game if you really think you're gonna get played? But I don't know, this might be like kind of a claim, but I don't know if I've ever bitched out anything.
But yeah, I went through those names quickly, but that's one hell of a lineup. And my point that I don't think I've made, and maybe I'll say clearly, is through those Slush games through the years, you've showed that like you are a really, really, really good skier, because you had all those head-to-heads with the best in the game, and you were like, yeah, I'm making a game. I lose some, but I win some.
For sure. Marshawn Lynch, this retired pro football player from the States.
Beast mode.
Yeah, beast mode, exactly. He there's a super funny quote from him, and he says, I get got, but I get mine more than I get got.
Dude, that dude has the best quotes ever.
Funny. He's so funny. So when he said that, I was like, you know what? It's okay to get got, but you got to get yours more than you get got. And if you're doing that, then you're good, you know? Like,
It applies to powder. It applies to street. It applies to everything.
Life, too. You know, life will get you down, smack you straight in the face, and you're like, what? But then you just got to keep getting yours, because, like, no, it doesn't stop. No one's going to pause for you. No one's going to feel bad for you. You just got to keep the ball rolling, dude.
He has the best run I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was against the Saints or if you remember that one. Going through, like, 12 dudes
just throwing people at the ground, and then he like jumps in the end zone all steezy. Yeah, he had style.
That dude would have been a good skier.
You know who that just reminded me of, because the Seahawks, is BMOS.
Reed Lewis.
Yeah, Yeah, Reed Lewis.
Yeah.
Bro,
he most had aggressive style ever.
Craziest energy, dude. He'd be at Hood, like, we'd be waiting in line for the jump, pretty much when I was a Grom at Hood, but, like, really starting to come around, like, really wanting to session super hard at this time.
Yeah.
And I just remember, like, there would be, like, 2-3 people at the top, and BMOS would be, like, rapping to his GoPro, like, hyping up the selfie stick for, like, 5 minutes, and the line would be like getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Most would be like, yeah, and then he'd drop and do his trick. But like skiing around that dude and like talking to him, I wonder how he's doing, dude. I haven't talked to BMO.
Like, I think of him and I just see like him hitting a wall ride and doing a dub backy out, fully laid out,
flat landing. I know Napes put together a lot of good 4x9 footage of him. I should go back and watch some of that for some inspiration. He goes hard.
I remember he did a duo edit with Noah Wallace that was really banging.
Yeah. Was that a Keystone or something or a Hood?
No, that was a Summer Hood edit.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
That was good.
Yeah, shout out Noah Wallace too.
Shout out Noah. Good.
Yeah.
Bossman.
Another Northwester too. He was just like kind of, he was a huge inspiration of mine because there wasn't that many people coming up out of like Missoula or even like the Northwest that were really trying to ski park. And so when I saw Noah really going for it and like trying to do the contest and really like wanting to compete and whatnot, that was super. And he got a couple X Games spots even. So I was like super inspired by that. I was like, okay, if Noah can go do it from Spokane, then I have no excuses, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's how it works. It's for a lot of people, it's seeing someone older from the same region or the same situation that got it done or that is getting it done. And you're like, okay, well, let's go on the same path.
For sure. And that's why I'm super hyped to be from Missoula because Kyler Cooley was from Missoula and he was pretty much the only other dude out of Missoula that was like really, you know, made it on a pretty high level. So, you know, I saw like,
but that's a while ago.
Yeah, and I saw like a photo of him. He got the cover of Powder once, I think, doing like a hand drag 3 over this pillow, and like he just had his perfect 2 fingers like laid out, like the light was perfect, and that was super crazy to me. Being like, okay, this dude is from here, dude. He's a pro skier. Like you can do it. You know, you can definitely do it. There's nothing really stopping you. But I was definitely comparing myself a lot as a younger kid to so many kids skiing park every single day, and I was just like, ah, this is killing me, but it all worked out.
And now it's time for another sponsor break. Access Board Shop has been dedicated to free skiing since its inception in 2002. At a time when some people and brands were still looking down on free skiing, Access believed in it fully. After 20 years of supporting athletes, movies, competitions, events, and so much more, Access is still going strong. This season, they're bringing back the infamous Summit Challenge. They're also starting the Grommet Challenge, a video competition aimed at young filmmakers where the winner gets an invite to participate in the Summit Challenge. They also started the Rat Races this season, friendly racing events through a bank slalom course with features in it where everyone is welcome. Above all, Access is a ski shop where you'll find everything you need for skiing, snowboarding, or skateboarding. Check them out in store in Saint-Sauveur or online at accessboutique.com. Support companies who support skiing. Support Access Board Shop. But yeah, you talked about riding a lot of resort and getting into park skiing later.
Yes.
Do you mean going like fully into it or really like you didn't hit a rail until like you were 13?
No, there was a couple parks around. Shout out to the Elstons, Jonah and Jared and Simon and Greta. They're a super cool family. They live in Bend, Oregon now, but they really put me on. I had so much fun with them. They were just two kids that I met, and they were just so steezy, like jackets to the knees, Giro G9 visor helmet, Oakley crowbars. Like they were just so thugged out. And I met them when I was 9. So I definitely was able to like, it was pretty much just trampoline. Like I would bounce on the tramp in the summer and then I would show up to the contest never having done any of the tricks. And then I would have to learn them in like my 5 runs of practice. And then, you know, at like the local comps, and that went on until I was about 15. And then I had kind of like a snowboard mentor of mine that let me live with him in Utah. His name was Dustin Linker. Shout out Dustin. He put me on a ton as well, but I didn't get to ski park consistently. So I learned a bunch of things in 2 weeks or whatever on a trip. And then there wasn't much room for progression after that, cause I would just go home, but then I would go shred at home and just go rip around and like find stuff to jump off of and whatnot. So it definitely made for like a cool combo. And then once I was able to dive all in, I was pretty much all in, and you couldn't really even get me out of the park. Like it would be snowing and I would be like bummed, you know, I'd be like, come on, I want to ski park.
How'd you get so good at rails though? Or like, when did that progression happen? Cause when we first saw you in edits and movies and, you know, like you were super unknown finalist in 2016.
Got super lucky to even get into that. That changed.
Why?
You
had your place there?
I ended up stepping up there. And it
was really?
That was like a big factor of mine, because I was graduating high school and
what do you mean stepping up? Like getting better?
Big time. And just knowing like, okay, like, you know, because that was the year Keegan Kilbride won. And so that was a huge eye-opener for me, just being like, all right, so this is how good Keegan is, and this is how good you have to ski to get noticed. And I was just graduating high school, and I remember being pretty shook in a way, like, holy cow, you know, high school's over, you know, and if I haven't really accomplished this dream within this year or next year, then it's
like putting a shit ton of pressure on yourself.
So much, and it like ruined the whole year for me, because like my whole senior year of high school, I put so much pressure on myself and I wasn't really like having much fun, you know, and it kind of like ruined it for me in a way. And then that Super Unknown Finals, like I was a wild card, and then there was some voting, and then somebody got hurt and dropped out, and then they invited me. So it was like super loose on my end. Like it wasn't a very like proper invite, but I knew when I went there, you know, it was on, and that totally turned it around for me. That was in late April. And then after that, went straight to West Coast Sessions. And then after that, Hood for the whole summer. So it was just like
one thing after another.
And then the ball really started rolling and things started to work out with Armada. And then they brought me to like the Armada team event. And then I got to ski with Dolo and Torin out there. And that's when I met Sammy, because there was the Powder Awards and Breck at the same time. So that's when I was like, okay, now I'm a part of something bigger than me and I can truly excel. And T Hall was the like team captain, you know, and he was following me around with a GoPro. So at that point, the confidence is starting to like,
and really. Armada believing in you at that time helps you link up with all those legends that, you know, are good mentors to have. Like, it's hard to have better mentors than, you know, being linked up with Sammy, Phil, Henrik, whatever.
I mean, yeah, that's why Armada is the best. And I waited super long too to get a ski sponsor. Like, I didn't want to be sponsored until I was on Armada. So I went all through high school, no ski sponsor. And then shout out to Dan Valair. He was the old TM. And Josh Bishop, I actually cold called Josh Bishop. And he reminds me of the story often. It's super funny. I called him and he was vacuuming his house. I think he was living in California and he was about to leave Armada and move on. But I was pretty much one of the last people that he really put on. And I just called him when I was like a 17-year-old kid. And I was like, hey, my skis are destroyed. I need skis. And he was like, I don't know who this kid is, but he just called me. And he seems dope that he likes telling me that story. You know, it's funny to like reminisce on it, but that's essentially how it happened. Is I just got a hold of him and called him, and yeah, he sent me my first pair of POW skis and a couple pairs of park skis, and it was on. And then Dan invited me to do tour, which was huge, and that's when things really started to go well with Armada.
Shout out to Armada for that, because I feel like that's something missing in the recent years is brands not just brands not just profiting from what the rider does, but also like helping the rider, help him make him into something and giving him opportunities. And
definitely,
just from the little things you've told me, like I've seen it, like I've seen you grow in the last years with Armada and them help you. But you know, when you say it like that opportunity and this other one and Dutour and I guess Gimbal Sessions and so on and so on and so on, it helps that you don't have to do it by yourself.
Well, super nurturing, and like realistically, nobody out here would have a ski career without somebody giving them an opportunity or putting them on, you know, it's... Mm-hmm.
But what I mean is sometimes there's people like spending 4 years doing crazy shit before they get the help. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, mm-hmm. I could have used it 4 years ago.
Exactly. And shout out to people who don't see opportunities immediately and continue to just grind and grind and grind. And I feel like someone that reminds me of that is like Auntie Olila. He seems to be super hooked up now, has really good sponsors, but I remember for a couple of years I was just like, he's the best and no one's even giving him skis, like what is going on? And then, you know, a couple people stepped up to the plate for him. But yeah, I mean, it also just depends on where you're from too. I feel like there's just certain people who for some reason you just don't have those connections. So it was super lucky that I was able to, you know, make my dream come true with Armada, because that was a main goal for me. It's just to, I just aligned with that brand and more so like just the culture and the idea of it all and the people who are around it, because I knew that it was hard to be a part of Armada, but once you were kind of in the family, then you're in the family, you know, and they really respect and love all their athletes and want to see all of them thrive. And there's a reason that every single person who's riding Armadas is there. And so I think that was like super important to me as a younger kid, to make sure that I could align with that. And so I think that's another thing, is just having like that idea too of where you want to be, how you want to be viewed. I think that can kind of create more opportunity for people if you kind of have a clear vision on where it is you want to go, rather than being like, oh, I hope this person would hook me up, or I hope these people would hook me up. It's kind of like align yourself with who you want to work with. And then if you kind of can put yourself in that position and create an aura around you that a brand will be drawn to, then I think those opportunities come a little bit easier, I'd say. Maybe not easier, but just a little more, they become a little more clear, and it's clear to the brand that you would be a good fit as well.
Mm-hmm. Maybe more naturally.
Supernaturally. I just feel like the quicker that you can align yourself with how you want to be seen, the quicker you're going to be seen by those people.
You talked about having a good aura or creating your own that makes you stand out.
Uh-huh.
And to me, that's where you really stood out, is you can't miss Quinn when he's skiing. Quinn is Quinn. And because you've competed for a while. I saw like on your FIS profile, like your first NORAM is in 2014. Your last World Cup is in 2021.
Whoa.
Like, we can talk about that afterwards, like your comp life. But my point is, you did a lot of comps. You were in that whole circuit, but still you maintain your own individuality still. So not sure if there's a question there. It's just a shout out.
Yeah, that's funny that you went back and like looked into that. But yeah,
I called your mom. I learned everything.
No, you didn't. My mom wouldn't even know. She like is a huge fan of skiing, and she's the best skier I know, for sure. My mom is insane at skiing.
Nope.
It's so amazing to go ski with her. But yeah, it could have went either way for me, I feel like, with the contest thing and or filming. But I just felt like I just wanted to at least see where the contest thing could go first. And it got to the point where, yeah, I was just missing something in that scene, you know, in the contest scene. There was just a big gap on like what I wanted to do versus what it was really like to be around those contests. And so I think by the time I like stepped away, it was super fulfilling to me to be able to step away from that and know that I was giving those opportunities to somebody else, because I didn't care to be there anymore. You know, I wanted to, I knew that being a professional skier is a small window of your life. And I knew that why would I spend my time going to these places that I don't even want to be when I could be going exactly where I want to be. And
why didn't you want to be there?
Because skiing for me is all about like what you can kind of learn along the way and who you're surrounded by. And I was never on the US ski team or anything like that. So I was showing up to these contests as like a, let's say, 21-year-old kid. Hmm. And I was buying my flight, paying my lodging, paying my entry fee.
Kind of as an outsider.
Always an outsider, which is fine. I do kind of see myself as a bit of a lone wolf in a way, which is totally fine. I feel like that's just how I've rolled. But it was just not the like community team aspect wasn't there for me. I was just at the top of the course like, all right, let's go lay down something as gnarly as I can. And no one gives a shit if I land or not. You know, I don't have a coach there like helping me formulate these runs or anything like that. So it was just kind of like that lack of, I could feel that lack of kind of support toward the end of it. And it's like easier to block that out some years, but.
But I feel like that can be demotivating also, because you talk about not having a coach there or, you know, someone that cares, but I feel like that applies to many comp skiers just for viewers outside. Like, if you post a edit or movie or a clip on Instagram, there's a lot of people that will see it and care and, you know, give feedback or whatever. And like, if you might do a super crazy run that might, like, you might be risking your health. And if you end up not qualifying for finals, like, no one will ever see that run ever.
No, not even you. Like, it's not even filmed, broadcasted, nothing. It's just,
which has to be in like, you tell me, like, because you've been there, but that must be like so underwhelming.
It's totally underwhelming. You flew all the way across the world for these two runs, and you like land your run in, and yeah, you maybe not get the score you want or whatever, and you're just like there. You're like, oh well, I came all the way here. You just mainly want to be like dialed in and focused and super stoked. And if you're not super stoked at a contest, then you probably shouldn't be there. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Well, I feel like that's the mentality for all of it. Like, if you're filming Powell or filming Street, or if you're not stoked, like if you're not in the right headspace, you shouldn't be there.
I totally agree. And almost most importantly with contests, because yeah, if you don't stop and like take the time to look around and enjoy yourself, I'd say that's the hardest to do when you're at a contest, because you're so focused and you really do want to do well. And so it kind of can suck like the traveling aspect out of it sometimes, or this, that, and the other thing. So I feel like if you can go out and even if you're not like super hyped on getting a clip someday, you're at least like out in the city rolling around looking for spots, seeing new things, buildings, architecture, or in the mountains you're looking at different, like just different beautiful things, and you can really like soak something up. But when you're at a contest, you're not really like looking around, you're really just there for one thing. So
yeah,
that's also like a different factor.
You're not partying because you need to be in shape for the next morning, and you're not enjoying the city you're in because you need to fly out to the next comp the week after.
Yeah, it's a very different way of being a professional skier, and it's super fun too though. And I mean, it's so sick to just get to show up to all these places, and there's just an insane course typically. Hopefully it's good, and it's just built for you. And
I've had that conversation with Belmar Skiing Parks, and he was like, it's hard to go back to normal parks when you've had World Cups. Like World Cup setups,
dude, for sure. I mean, you can't even get into a public park nowadays that has a jump like over 60 or 70 feet, you know, and then So you're really not riding like good big courses unless you're at those contests too. So that's definitely a factor of it. But I don't know. I'm in this phase now where I love skiing in the park and just flowing and knowing that I still have so many tricks in the bag. It's still so fun to just go show up even to a little park or whatever. I still really love it.
But you guys have it good where you are, like in between Woodward and Brighton and Park City.
Oh yeah. Utah, Nucleus.
Tell me about the Nucleus.
It's dope. I can't seem to really get away from it. I've thought about moving back up north to Montana, but I have just so many good friends here, and it's so nice to be able to just roll into the office, the Armada office in Park City, and now I'm on Giro, and they have an office in Park City as well. There's just a lot going on around here, so it definitely makes it easy to go have fun here. It's really not a struggle to get out and go.
Yeah, it feels like it's the center of the skiing universe right now, or maybe it always has been, but you know.
Utah for sure. I think Innsbruck now is kind of like the European.
Yeah, maybe side. For America.
Yeah, exactly. And now I feel like Innsbruck, as far as Europe goes, is definitely like the new hub over there. So many people are moving there and hanging out there. So there's a good scene there as well.
Yeah, we talked about you competing starting 2014, let's say your first NORAM, but you got to have started before that. And your last World Cup being in 2021. That's still a long time. Like, do you keep good memories from that? Do you have like a... Do you look back at it like, oh, I wish I would have been skiing POW, or do you still like look at it as a good times?
No, I don't regret anything that I've done in my ski career at all.
Because you progressed a lot. You went from NORAMs to World Cups. You did Dew Tour. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to X Games.
Yeah.
And eventually last year, like it's unrelated because not unrelated, but knuckle huck is not slope style. Like it's a different thing, but you know, ending up with an X Game gold, which is... It's the dream.
No, I can't hate on that at all. And to have something like that under my belt now finally is so nice. Definitely trying to go do it again. But yeah, just to have something like that to like hang my hat on, and definitely made it feel like all worth my time to have spent inside the park. And you know, that was kind of like that event just is super tailored to me as well, is the sense of just being able to go flow and create and enjoy that whole side of things. And yeah, I mean, it's just that event is so sick. So it was nice to have something that pertained to me the most and be able to go excel at that event. It was super fun. But yeah, I don't regret anything. And looking back on it now, it's like I have so many good memories, and I've definitely met some of my best friends through that as well. So no regrets.
What's your favorite like comp memories from the years? Because people who are outside it don't necessarily realize it, but just being in the NORAMs, you get to go to like the best places. You go like 1 week to Aspen and the other one to Mammoth, and you know you're not in a shitty hill riding a shitty course. Like it's still good stuff.
Definitely, it's good stuff, and I think it's just fun for the mentality to be like, all right, I'm showing up here and I want to just go do my best, and to like link a bunch of your hardest tricks together. There's not many better feelings than that.
Yeah.
Stomping your run. So I it taught me a lot about like how to do stuff under pressure, and you know, you learn a lot about yourself by, you know, you fall. One run, and then you have one more to go do it, and like to be able to change your mentality into a not so stressed mindset, and just know that you have the ability to go do that and to turn around and actually go execute is another thing. So I mean that definitely helps the mindset when getting into a bunch of different stuff, especially like filming. You know, you got to go do it. You only have a couple of tries in the POW before it's bombed out or something. So you definitely want to like show up and just go lace up.
What's the maximal number of tries you'd say that's acceptable in POW?
you could go unlimited, you know. You really can if you really want to. It just
but totally like depends. with the good etiquette. Like 10, 15, 10?
It just depends on if you're jumping or not. Like if you're jumping, then you can hit it as many times as you want until it's like too bombed out, and it depends on how you've slammed and if there's like...
So you mean bummed out, that if it's too bummed out, it's harder for you to land because there's too much shit in the way?
Yeah, exactly. And like those tracks end up being like what you might stomp something, but then those tracks might end up like whipping you down just after you stomp, or there's a bomb hole, so you end up landing like uphill or something, and it's just then, yeah, you blow up and it's over. Good etiquette, I don't know. It just depends on what you're skiing. Sammy told me to don't worry about if you want to go back up and ski a line. Like if you've skied it once, it doesn't matter. Go up and ski it again. Yeah. Because early in your PAL career, you only get so many moments to like feel stuff out. So might as well go feel it out as much as you possibly can, because who cares if you get a clip or not? I mean, if you are getting comfy in the backcountry, that's going to help your next endeavor.
Yeah. Even if it's not for a clip, just do it for yourself and for the experience and the learning.
The feeling, yeah. Like going over a blind roll and stuff, it's not going to be perfect your first time every time. So it's definitely good to just feel it out as much as you possibly can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what I had in mind with my question was more with booters, where it seems like for people, maybe Sammy or Dane Tudor back in the days, it seemed like the game was more, let's build a booter and let's do like a dub 10, corksev first hit. And if I get it, then I'm out. It's just like, you know, have the shot of me landing in the POW with no tracks, and then I'm not hitting it again. That was it.
If you get your trick and you grab good and everything's clean and it's all a feeling. When you get a clip, it's just a feeling. It's not like,
you know, you got it when you got it.
Yeah. And like, it's the same with street too. It's just the feeling of it. Like when you ski out, you're like, yeah, that was it. So, and if that goes down first try, all more power to you. You got out.
I've never seen someone get a street clip first try.
Yeah. I mean, that's, no, it's no, yeah, it's just not going to go down like that.
I've seen Matt get a 6 kink inside of 10 tries this year, and that was the craziest I've ever seen.
Yeah, what 6 kink and how many tries?
Like 10 or 9 or 10, something like that.
And that's a good day, you know.
Dude, that was like, I was shook.
Yeah, 30, 40 minutes of skiing and you got your clip. That's definitely
that's like
intense.
Me being mentally ready to be sitting down all day in the cold. And then being like, okay, well, do we hit another spot?
For sure. You boot down and boot up. Go find it. Yeah, good, good.
You've had a couple of years experience doing street. Like, you have stuff that go way back. Like, I was rewatching Roasted.
Yep.
And, you know, you've had, in the Slush movie, you've had a mix between street and POW.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you say, I'm guessing you enjoy most POW because that's what you're leaning into right now. Mm-hmm. But what have you found like the most hard? Because both are really different in different ways. The process of getting a shot in one or another.
Skiing street was just harder for me mentally, because mentally I wasn't as, you know, I wasn't frothing as hard on the street. So like mentally it was like, stepping to something was definitely a lot harder, whereas in the POW, stepping to something,
it's calling you.
Yeah, it's like come hit me, I want you to come here, please come ski me. Whereas like in the streets, I'm standing at the top of the feature like, okay, I would love for this to be over.
Can we get a shot right now and go have a beer?
Yeah, the water, a granola bar, anything, dude.
Monster.
Yeah, Monster. Shout out to Monster. Drink a little drink. Those have helped me through a couple of sessions before, I'm sure. But yeah, it's like I said, it's all a feeling. So it's just the feeling of being at the top of something for like a POW clip. You're feeling so much better about it. And I mean, personally, just more excited. So
yeah, we touched on it briefly, I think, but tell me more about last year, because you filmed with the Slush crew that you're good friends with before then. And then last year, your first full POW segment, your first time with Torin and the Deviate crew. Tell me all about it. How, why, when, where, what?
Who, what, when, where, why, how, filming a full POW seg for Deviate. It actually kind of dates back to a super motivating summer, not this last summer, but the summer before. Was just like a super motivating summer for me to kind of get back into a groove. And so I went out to California and I stayed with Clayton Villa for 2 weeks and his fiance, Carly. And I just got to kick it with them. And I just picked Clayton's brain because I just knew that he had advice, and I don't even really know what led to it. I had just linked up with Clayton a couple times here and there, and he got to be the boy a little bit. And so I kind of just called him and asked him if I could come stay, and I just went and surfed out there with him for 2 weeks, and he pretty much, you know, I sucked at surfing when I went out there, and he totally helped out. But I think it all starts with that. And he pretty much told me, like, don't go film unless you have something to say. And that last year, my Deviate segment was me saying something. And essentially what I was trying to say was, what's up, everybody? I'm here. I hope that I get welcomed with open arms. And
how do you translate the having something to say to skiing? Like don't get a shot except if you have something special in mind, or
more so like if you're building out a segment, make sure that there is something, you're saying something within that segment, you know. Your skiing will speak for itself, and I think last year with my skiing it spoke for itself in the sense of just, I'm here, I have arrived. This is exactly what I want to be doing. I'm finally in a place where I am doing what I want to in my ski career versus kind of like following a couple of other things that I felt like might be the right path. You know, doing those contests, traveling around, doing a bunch of different stuff, and really trying to almost, I wasn't really pleasing myself. So I think when I think about that, and having something to say, it was pretty much me saying, I'm here, this is what I want to be doing. And it was finally me like stepping into exactly where I needed to be on skis. And it kind of was a long time coming. But that's just what I was really trying to say with that is, check this out, and there's going to be so much more of this to come. This is just the beginning, kind of.
So. What was the process of filming? Was it, how much of your winter was dedicated to that? Because we saw you, you know, Kimbo Sessions in the spring, saw you at X Games. How do you get that done? Were you, was it like a month long cabin trip with the boys and you got it done?
No, it was after X Games. It was like, all right, all in, so focused, nothing else matters. It was just such an amazing lead up to all of that. And so we did like 3 weeks in Montana and then 5 or 6 weeks in Canada. And that was the season. I didn't even really get a clip until February 14th last year, which felt pretty crazy. And I was kind of stressing about that this year. But then I kind of had the realization like, all right, I didn't even start filming until then last year. So if I'm filming just a bit earlier this year and maybe a little longer too, I think the winter is just a bit way better this year. So I think that'll pay off as well. Hopefully it'll go a bit longer and we'll get better snow consistently throughout the winter, because last year was actually really, really pretty tough for everybody. And I think a lot of people were battling the adversity of lack of snow.
Yeah. I think when filming, it's all a matter of when it clicks sometime. With like the either the elements or yourself, like you might not get clips for 2 weeks, but at a point you get 5 clips in 2 days. It's like you can't, like, you gotta just stay hopeful, kind of.
You have to stay hopeful. You have to stay motivated. You have to stay, you know, because there were days where I was calling my brother back in Montana and I was like, dude, I haven't gotten a clip in 11 days. And, you know, that was like, I thought that that was like the end of the world, but I didn't really know what I was sitting on. I think it was kind of like a ignorance is bliss type of thing. I didn't really know what, you know, you kind of get your clips, but then you don't relish in those. You just know you want more and you have more ideas. So that was kind of the most interesting thing for me last year, was just being like, I don't think I have much. And then actually realizing that you have more than you thought. And one person that really, like, after the final product was done for the Deviate flick, Chameleon, was watching Kimbo, you know, and seeing all those little moments that he put together and kind of watching that come about for him and what his segment actually rounded out to look like. It was super impressive to me to, like, see that those little moments, and, like, there was, like, you know, those times that maybe I was kind of overlooking and underestimating as far as, like, what helps to build out a segment. So I learned a lot after the process was done by, like, watching his stuff and realizing that there's actually so many good little things that you can do as well that really help round out a segment.
Do you have any examples of that?
Yeah, just like on bad days, you know, like snow sucked and he would, like, go find a super sick pitch and go get a little follow cam of, like, a wheelie or a super sick turn or something like that, you know, where I was so focused on, like, singular trick or a line or just these things that, you know, you almost overlook those small moments because you're so focused on getting this ideal trick that you have in your head or looking for that ideal, like, pitch or slope or jump or feature that you want to hit. But it actually, what it comes down to is, like, even on those, like, small days where the snow might suck or something, you can still go out and go get something for your segment that's gonna look really good. But it might not feel like you went out there and got a clip. You're not gonna, like, you might come home and be like, yeah, I did a couple little things today, but those little things also tend to add up as well, I think.
Yeah, it's not the biggest brick in your segment, but it's still part of the whole build.
Yeah, and it said a lot about Kim and, like, what, how hard he was willing to work on just even those little things on those days where I'm out there, like, rolling my sled down the hill, you know, just, like, messing around and being like, oh, this, you know, this is not the day, because I was just had my sights set on maybe something big. But in the end, it's like you also have to take in those small moments as well. And you, if you walk away with even something small, it's definitely going to be a lot better than you think.
Yeah.
And better than nothing, but also just better than you think too. Yeah. Like at the end of the day, or like at the end of the year, when you see it all come together, it's definitely way more surprising. Yeah.
And I think it says a lot about how long Kim has been doing it, that he's done it a lot of times, a lot of years with different crews in the streets, in the park, and in the POW. So, like, there's that experience that comes in that bad day, saying, like, yeah, let's do something with this bad day that we're having.
Definitely don't let any day slip through the cracks. There's opportunity everywhere. It just depends on what you're looking for. And I think that was something that I missed last year. It was just being too motivated for certain things, and not giving enough love and credit to those smaller things. And so I think this year with the segment, I'm definitely looking forward to obviously doing bigger and better things, but paying my respects to the turn or, you know, something a little smaller, but it actually, when it comes to light, looks really good. And Sean Logan is such a good filmer. He filmed our whole project and edited the whole thing pretty much by himself. Yeah.
There were some sick shots. I don't remember which trick exactly, but you have a jump clip that he does a follow cam.
Yeah.
And then keeps following you for a while and you do a couple turns, and that shot was so sick.
it was, I was so happy when we got that, stepped out. And that was one of those days, actually, where I was like, pretty bad snow, not a whole lot of like beautiful stuff going on. But we still found something, and like that ended up being one of my favorite shots of the whole movie. And Sean, yeah, killed it. It's sick that he's such a good skier, and he's worked with, you know, so many people who are really, really good. So, I mean, it was super impressive to see how he operated and handled the whole thing. And I learned so much from him.
For people, because I know there's always some younger people listening, Sean Logan, who is Chris Logan's brother, who's a super dope filmer who's done it for a while, who is also a pro skier, I guess we could say, quote unquote. Like, he's been in Level One movies featured. Like, he was a good skier.
Super good. Super good. Super humble guy. Really funny, dry humor. And yeah, he's been doing it for a long time. I mean, he had his whole series, The Big Picture, with Parker and Chris. And yeah, it was really nice to just learn so much from someone who had been around for a while and really, really crushed it and knew the ins and outs of a lot of things.
And you said you were staying 6 weeks in Canada?
Yeah, it was a long time, dude. I being up there, it was like, I guess I live here now. That's what it felt like.
Like, do you get claustrophobic at some point?
No, I had so many good times by myself. Just put the headphones on, say it's like an off day or the snow sucked or something. I had so much time. I mean, that was probably the craziest thing about doing a backcountry season last year, is like, I was living life in the fast lane and not thinking and not reflecting as much on myself and just my decision-making and everything in life. And then I started to go out into the backcountry every day and nobody's around. No one's there to really make conversation. You're just so, your senses are all firing because you're obviously trying to stay safe and make sure everybody else is staying safe. And you're looking out for a bunch of things. But that was the craziest thing. I remember just getting like slammed in the face with all these different thoughts and like my actual reality of where I'm at in life. I had so much time to think, and that was definitely probably the craziest part. Is, yes, all the skiing was crazy, but it was more just spending so much time with myself and living in my head. I had a lot of time to like almost process all of these things that I maybe wouldn't have thought of otherwise, or would have been swept under the rug, just like, you know, negative things within my personality that I didn't necessarily like about myself. Or, you know, you think about like how you treated someone like a year ago and you're like, what? That was so
the things lame. You never think about that pop up, like when you're in the shower.
For sure, but you're in the shower for 8 hours. Yeah. You know, and yeah, it's like not a lot of people get that time to think in their life. So I would consider that one of the biggest blessings of being a pro skier, is actually just being able to spend that time in your head and really reflect on yourself and your personality. And yeah, mainly that.
What was your crew? Torin, Kim, yourself, Sean Logan.
And then Chris Logan came to Sealy with us. Tim McChesney also came to Sealy with us. And so those first couple of weeks, like, learned a lot from those guys, a couple of people who have just been out there for a long time. But yeah, the Canada stint was like the main stint of the season, and where everybody was really feeling, you know, confident and getting in the groove. So yeah, it was mainly Kim and Torin and Sean, but they all had girlfriends.
That were there?
No, they weren't there, but we would get home from shredding and it would be like 6 or 7 and they would go call their girlfriends and stuff. And I was like, I was single and just like, come on, like, let's go to a hockey game, or let, you know, I would just bug them to do some random stuff. So I had to go out on my own a couple of times and just like step into some random things just to entertain myself. But I spent a lot of time listening to so much music and just had my headphones on all the time and would go on walks and go on and like jump in the lake in the middle of winter and, you know, Damn. Take an ice bath by myself and just like random stuff like that was just, yeah, it was such a funny year of how introspective I actually got. And I think I even had more time to reflect on that this summer and really think about it, but it was really good for me. And I think a lot. So,
it's one hell of a season. Like the first part, you did some street with Tanner.
Yeah.
You went to X Games, and then like there's the second part where there's the Deviate middle of the winter, and then there's the spring where there's Kimbo sessions and busy times.
It felt busy, but it also felt like the best season ever, because going back to like the contest things, is I was like boarding these flights to say like Font Rameau, France or something, and I was just like, why am I getting on this flight? You know, I don't even want to go.
Did
you
actually have those thoughts?
Yeah, for sure. I'd be like, why am I getting on this flight? Like, I don't want to go to this place at all. I don't want to go to this place, you know? And
why were you doing it? Like, just stuck in a loop, or because there was like that Olympic dream, or?
Yeah, I think a couple of different things. Yeah, like, I mean, I missed the Olympic team by one spot in 2018 for Pyeongchang. So that definitely was like, that sucked, and that was a motivating factor. But I also got like really, really like destroyed that season too, like physically. I took some of the worst slams of my whole life, and I had one crash in particular that definitely could have, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it was this switch dub 9 overshoot in Aspen, and I land completely flat. I'll send you the clip. I overshot the landing. Like I think I finally got to meet Simon Dumont, and I was like telling him about it, because I was like, dude, like I was almost on your level. And and I ultimately ended up like that summer, I don't know if I would call it PTSD, but I was having like super, super gnarly nightmares where I'd like wake up completely like covered in sweat, thinking about like how bad that could have been, and like almost like reliving that. And so stepping into the park, those like last couple of years of competing, it was just like the confidence was there, and I knew that I could do the tricks, but mentally I was so terrified of like living through that again. I think subconsciously I wasn't like sitting there thinking like, oh, I hope I don't overshoot again, but it was like I couldn't quite trust my skiing the same after that, as far as competing goes.
Yeah. Is that something you talked with other people who had those, like Tanner, who had multiple like gnarly crashes?
Well, not really, because I ended up like skiing away from that particular crash that I was talking about. But I mean, I remember like I had enough time in the middle of a switched up 9 to say I'm going to die 4 times, like out loud.
Had enough time to say like, am I going for triple or not? Am I going for triple or not?
Well, it's weird, because I actually wanted to do a switch trip because I wanted to win the contest, but I had fallen on the rail and I like rolled over the first knuckle, and I just remember like taking off and the lip was like a sheet of ice. And as soon as I took off, I was like, oh no.
Yeah. You know it right away.
Oh, I was flying, dude. And yeah, in the air, I was like, I'm going to die. I'm going to die. I'm going to die. I'm going to die. And then boom, I hit, and my legs were like buzzing and numb, and I couldn't like feel my like fingers for a while. And I remember like people kind of coming down to me, and I think everybody kind of expected me to, you know, have double blown knees or broken both legs, or, you know. And so that was like one of the scariest things. Like within 1 second, 2 seconds, I was like, yeah, I'm done, dude. I'm done. Like, this is not going to be good. You know,
done with skiing or with comps?
Life. I mean, I'm not even kidding you. Like, that was the first time in my life where I was like, yeah, I'm dead. You know, I'm going to die right here. Is what.
Okay, you thought you were like dying.
I mean, as soon as I hit the ground, I was like, I mean, my spine is going to go through my brain if I don't like land this perfectly, you know?
Yeah.
And I ate it. Like, I ate the crash as best as I could. Like, the way my body compressed, I stomped to dead flat, and my chest hit my knees, and my face scraped the ground first while I was still on my feet. So like, I compressed so much that my face was actually the first thing that really hit, like my feet hit, and then my face was dragging across the ground, and then my skis finally like had enough energy to like release, and then I flipped forward.
God damn.
And so I think that moment kind of just like subconsciously like pushed me away from the whole thing, because
you're lucky not to have broken your back or
exactly. I mean, that's what I was saying. Like, I thought I was done for. I definitely thought my ski career was going to be over. So going back to, did I like talk to say like Tanner or Torin or anybody who's seen an injury like that? Like, yes, I probably would have, but I also didn't really know how to ask for help until about last year. You know, I always kind of internalized all those things and really like processed them myself. And I also think just like me having skied away from that kind of like almost took away from the fact of how gnarly it really was, you know, because I got up and I skied down and then I went to the hospital 40-50 minutes later, just to make sure that my body was all good. But, and then 2 weeks later I was playing Henrik in that slush game. So it was just like,
really shit.
Yeah. So like mentally it was kind of like,
and before Henrik, you beat Belmar and you beat Tom Rich and you beat
someone Alex, else? I think
A-Hall.
I think those were the three that I played, and all of those were such good games and I had so much fun. But I mean, yeah, I bought my flight to that slush cup the day before, cause I didn't know if I was going to be healthy or not. And I was still pretty beat up when I got there, but I was able to ski through it. But
that's crazy knowing like these small details in the backstory.
Yeah, I think that's why mentally that I didn't really like take the time to process it and like talk to people about it, because it was easy to move on in the sense of I had so much more to look forward to that season still. But at the same time, like that later that summer, like, I flew home and after like a 3 month trip in Europe, and it was the best season of my life. But then all of that kind of hit me like a huge wave, probably in June. And I remember I just got like super depressed, unmotivated. And it was super weird because it was like my best season ever. But I also realized how it could have gotten like taken away from me. And I didn't really process that. And, so my brain did it for me subconsciously through the dreams and everything like that.
It caught up to you, how do you say, retroactively?
I don't know what the word would be, but yes, it definitely caught up to me. And that's when I really like changed as a human too. Just like, it was such a gnarly experience. And like, when I talk about it with my family and stuff, it makes them like sick to their stomach because it was so gnarly. But I never really talked about it with anybody. And it was never really like a highlight crash or anything like that really like ruined me. And I don't know why that it like, I was able to just get up and ski out of that. Super lucky, really.
But it was for you to make those POW segments.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It really like slowly pushed me away from the whole park skiing and slopestyle and that side of things. But I mean, obviously I still did some contests after that, but it was never really the same.
After that, you did do X Games slope and big air, like some like high pressure, I guess, spots where there's TV and there's the best in the world doing the crazy stuff. Like, how was that? Doing those events, like after, like now that I know that you had that mental incertitude about those gnarly stuff, like
it was gnarly. Like I said, it was never the same.
Still went for the triple front though.
Well, so and that's what ended up like making it like fun for me when I got that big air invite and the slope invite. I was doing three events at X. It was like dream come true in a way, but at the same time, mentally, I knew that I was kind of past that. So, but I wasn't about to say no, you know, it was a great opportunity. Like,
you don't say no to that.
Yeah. Like, what am I going to be like? No, I don't really want to do big air. I don't really feel comfy, you know? And I still like, I learned to switch up Bio 16 in that contest. I, you know, but I was nowhere near the level of some of the other people that were skiing in that event. But the triple front flip was so funny. Like,
was that your first?
Yeah, first, maybe last, but I've been thinking about doing it in Nepal just to like get one done, like a
super. I don't think it's ever been done.
I don't know. I just know DeLorme did the triple back, and it was like, that was pretty inspiring. So I feel like if I could go find like a massive jump to go do like a sick triple front flip on, like
triple front double nose.
Yeah. Shout out to P White. But yeah, something like that, you know, a steezy triple front flip with like a wheelie out on like a huge jump would be super sick. But my friend Cody Ray was, it was right before X, and he was bugging me, do a triple front flip in big air, do a triple front flip in big air. And I was like, dude, I can't like, you know, make myself look like a clown here. Like, I still have to like try my best. And I didn't warm it up at all. I was kind of stressing. So I was like really working on the tricks that I wanted to do within the contest. But then last hit of practice, like I did one dub front, and I was like, all right, well, I did one dub front. Like, at least I've felt that. And I was in dead last on my last hit in big air. And I was like, well, Cody told me he's seen me do it. And Cody was like, I've seen you do it in my head a million times. And I was like, if my friend has watched me do that trick a million times in his head, then obviously I can do it, I guess. And so I just ran it. It was terrifying, though.
Really?
Oh my gosh, dude, that was the scariest trick I've ever done. Like, I felt like I was going to puke.
And plus, it was snowing and it's at night, so you must be blind all the time.
Almost. I wasn't even wearing goggles. I don't even know what I was doing, dude. It was just a whole loose operation, but I'm glad I got it done. I'm glad I did it at X Games. I'm like glad that like...
You knew the airtime was there, I guess. And
yeah, and plus like I usually try to do like one dub front every year just to like do one. Because I think it's funny, and it's like a funny trick to just be able to like whip up. And so I had done enough dub fronts where I was like, all right, like, what's one more, you know?
Have you ever done the Dumont one?
Superman?
Yeah.
Yeah, not like fully boned out, though. I've like looked at it with like a little lawn dart with like the hands to the side, you know, a little extendo, but I've never like...
You need to do a one for Simon and the POW.
For sure. That was
big Superman.
I know a lot of people who were like within skiing were pretty pissed about that, because there was, you know, I think PK Hunder did like some of the first switch dub quark 12s that night. And
yeah,
but the fan voting,
Well, that was weird. It was fan voting, but it was like live on the spot for people that were at the bottom with their cell phones, like something really, really weird, like 2008, trying to figure out what
technology.
Yeah.
No, that was super funny. But as far as like what I was seeing as a Grom, I was watching that like super hyped on it. So
yeah, same.
So whatever, it all worked out.
Yeah, it was a nice era. Like, I think in that contest there were like PK doing his nice dubs, Simon doing a dub front, and like Yoon doing Kangs.
Yeah, and Yoon was doing switch dub tens as well. I remember another X Games that like weighs heavy in my mind was the year that Henrik was in big air, and he did like, I think he got like sixth, maybe fifth or something. And that's when I realized that I wasn't that hyped on contests. I was 13 and I watched X Games. And
was it like with his black and white jacket?
Yeah.
When he did the dub 10 bio, not the dub 10, but the bio 10 blunt, and he was
And he did a bio 14. He also did a switch dub 12, 5 to 7 with a tweaked safety. Yeah. And I just remember him getting like a Bobby won that year, and I was super hyped on what Bobby was doing.
Might be like 2011.
Mm-hmm. It was. And I watched that, and I just remember being like, comps are so dumb. Like, the person who is doing like the sickest tricks is getting fifth. And I remember Jossie Wells also was doing switch dub 14 mutes, I think, the year after that, and he might have gotten like fourth. And I don't know, I just remember being like, style not being as rewarded, and
that
kind of like almost turned me away from it. But then obviously, like, the year after that, Henrik won with like some dub sevs, and when he did the nosebud trip, and like, it kind of all came back around for Henrik, which was like also cool to see. Like, if you do persevere and you do just keep working on your craft, like, you will see the results. But I think that was like an interesting turning point for me, like watching that with all my homies and being like, huh, like the dude who's the steeziest doesn't win. And I remember being like, not doing that.
The good guy should win.
Just this guy with the style should win. But, yeah. You know, we've seen it now. Those guys have seen those results.
Yeah. He did eventually win.
Exactly. And then won and won and won and won and won and continue to. So obviously it pays off if you're willing to work hard. And I'm glad that like someone like Henrik didn't get like deterred and bummed out by judging early on.
Because it did take a couple of years for him, like, let's say 2008 to 2013, where he wasn't getting as much like good results as he did like 2013 to 2018, let's say.
Yeah, exactly. No, and not at all, dude. So, I mean, it was cool to like at least get to see that come full circle. But I remember that turned me off of contests just a little bit because I was so hyped on the tricks that he was doing. And
yeah,
they didn't seem to get rewarded. So I was like,
That's a bit of a tension, but talking about Henrik and you being the new POW guy, he recently released Salute, his 2020 movie. What's your thoughts, man? I rewatched it and I was like, that is the best backcountry booter performance I've ever seen in my life. I didn't remember it that well, but like, I'm speechless. Like, so many perfect shots of gnarly jumps, of gnarly tricks. And what's your thoughts on it?
My thoughts are I'm glad he did it. You know, I'm glad that he went out there and took the time to go do all those tricks in the backcountry, because like you said, it's one of the best backcountry jump segments ever by a lot.
Going from a triple 14 mute to just a, not just, but like, you know, on one side, triple 14 mute, and on the other one, like bio 10 leading Japan, like, incredible stuff.
I know. I should probably go watch that again too. I watched it in the airport when it first came out. I bought it and I watched.
There was too much at some point that I rewinded and took a pen to take notes of all the tricks.
It's so insane. Yeah, when you actually like are able to break that down. Plus, I mean, that was all probably within like a couple of weeks too.
Dude, you could see that he was on a comp schedule. Like, there's some shot in Baker where it's foggy as hell.
Doesn't care.
And
I know, rainy, and
it was like, I've never done backcountry, but my guess is people would be like, no, I'm not filming today. I'm going to sleep. And he was like, no, I have X Games in a week. I'm going to do a switch dub Misty and then I have a flight.
Mm-hmm. No. And I'm sure he loaded all his gear soaking wet time to time. Like, yeah, it's good to see. And it's good to have people like that and role models like that to really show how hard you have to work to really be the best. And it showed in that video.
I'm glad you released it online, because it's something that needed to be online for free, like for posterity, for the future.
Yeah.
So that like people can go back in 10 years and go on YouTube and be like, yeah, he's the GOAT.
For sure. And I was out in Andorra, I think, at the tail end of his first year filming for Salute, where he got some of those like really, really like springtime shots, you know, when he's talking about it. And I think it was actually in the regiment.
His Andorra summer segment.
Yeah, that was in the regiment. But I remember like watching him out there and how hard he worked. I mean, it almost freaked me out, because I was like a 20-year-old kid. Like, I was like, oh shit, this is what you got to do to be the best. And so it was definitely like eye-opening to see how hard he was working around
that. Understand that it's not luck, or it's not, you know.
No.
It's talent and it's a shit ton of hard work.
Drive, so much drive to like wake up and go do that over and over and over. And also like, watching him be like, I can't watch a documentary, or I can't play video games unless I'm on my spin bike. And he would be like on his spin bike playing video games, you know. Like, there was never, he's like a David Goggins of skiing in a sense of just being like, even if I'm like at my mental aid station, like eating or chilling or doing something, he's always like dreaming something up or working towards that next goal. So I think that really like goes to show the passion and also level of just hard work of what it takes to really excel like that.
So we're early January.
Yep, January 6th.
In a couple of weeks, you'll be doing the knuckle huck. What do you have in mind?
I'm not going to like spill the beans. I don't know when this will come out, but I definitely have
I'm going to time it and release it during the comp so people learn it at the same time.
At the same time. Well, if that's the case, then...
No, I don't know. We'll see.
There's a couple of tricks that I've been thinking about, though, that I really would like to do. So one trick that I had thought of a lot was like switch tail bud 3, switch cork 3, like switch dub sev almost, like really, really, really corked out. I thought about that one quite a bit. I think it just is going to depend on how much air we have off the knuckle. But obviously, I know that this year is going to go crazy at knuckle huck. I feel like, I don't know why.
What's your thinking, like knowing you're going to go back to that comp? Like, let's say you won last year, so I'm guessing there's no reason not to re-invite you when you win. Do you spend like time at Kimbo sessions practicing knuckle tricks? Do you, you know, or do you just like meditate on some nice variations you'd like to do when the occasion arises?
A little bit of both. Not as much like at Kimbo. I think Kimbo is meant for just whatever is right in front of you and whatever comes to mind personally. But when it comes down to the actual contest, like I remember last year, I
love the body drag 5.
Thank you. Yeah, I kind of want to maybe turn that one into a 9 this year if I can. We'll see. I don't know. There's a couple of things that I have in mind, but yeah, like those things. But it was weird, like you kind of touched on it about maybe 20 minutes ago, but it was you were talking about how I went and hit street with T-Hall and Ferdy and Woodsy early season last year. And I got back from Europe and I got pretty wrecked first day skiing back in the Northern Hemisphere. And I had to just chill for a month. I hurt my back really bad, scorpioned. And so I didn't ski until I went out to Montana and skied with T-Hall and got those street clips. And that was like my first couple of days skiing. And then after that, went home. And I think I just skied park from tomorrow's date, January 7th. And I just skied park until X and meditated on all of those tricks. And was like doing half of them essentially, like feeling out the first part of the butter and then being like popping off the tails and being like, okay, could I do that? How does that feel? So I think it's a little bit of both, a little bit of meditating and a little bit of actually doing as well. I mean, last year I came into it knowing that I like had to win kind of. I had gotten third at knuckle huck twice and that didn't really matter because there was no podium.
Yeah.
And then last year they told me there was going to be a podium and I was like, well, that's stupid because I would have been on the podium twice. I would have 2X Games medals, but instead I don't. So I was like, well, I'm only standing on one place on that entire podium and it's going to be the top.
It's as if at the beginning it was a test event. Like they didn't know if it would stick and then, oh, okay, it's sticking. Okay, let's do a podium.
Yeah, exactly. And it was super sick. And they had Trevor Kennison like give us all the medals and everybody crushed. So, I mean, that was one of the best nights of my life. It was so fun.
It's good that you put it into reality.
I know.
Like, I'm going to go and win. But I guess it might also have, like, nothing to take away from your win, but it might have helped that you were not doing slopestyle and bigger that time.
Definitely, it helped.
Like that you could focus on it.
It helped so much. Like, like you said, not to take away from it, but at the same time, like I was able to put my energy all into that. And it felt so good to just show up to X and be like, I got nothing. And that's why like in the post interview, I shouted out everybody who was doing multiple events because I knew how hard that was and I knew how much energy it takes and I knew how sore my body was skiing Knucklehuck Sunday night after skiing Big Air on a like Saturday night, competing in slopestyle on Sunday and then skiing in Knucklehuck Sunday night. Like I remember how taxing that was. So that's why I did shout out those guys because I was like, so
yeah,
so gnarly. So yeah, I'm looking forward to kind of having the upper hand on that again because all I would do during the day is just go ski park at Snowmass or
yeah,
you know, I was just staying greased up, flowing. It was fun.
Shout out to Gus and Jossie who both did all three events for years.
So gnarly.
Yeah,
and half pipe too is one of the craziest sports ever. So shout out to those guys for really holding it down and going hard all the time.
So to close off the episode, I have people on Patreon who asked me questions for you.
Nice.
So I got that right now. So Olden Baldassi asks, who started the Quan thing? Who's Quan? Is it your alter ego?
That's sick that you asked that because I've actually been meditating on kind of creating an alter ego a lot because I know like a lot of music artists have alter egos.
Yeah.
And
kind of like B-Dog and Idolo and all that.
Definitely, dude. And I mean, I feel like as a kid, you just think of them like that as B-Dog and Idolo and you don't really think much about it, but I'm sure they've put some energy into creating a person that is really like within themselves, but not fully them either.
Well, you can definitely see it with Phil's artwork on his keys and all that. You know, the B-Dog character.
Yeah, 100%. And I like listen to the podcast with you guys as well and him talking about that and how it like shows through his cartoon and everything. So I'm sure he's pretty in check with his alter ego and I'll probably write some about my alter ego as well here pretty soon. In the journal, but Quan started pretty early days. There was this rapper Rich Homie Quan, and he kind of fell off, but he was like signed with Young Thug but yeah, it kind of started then when I was like 15 getting called Rich Homie Quan by my friend Darian, and then I remember I walked into a hotel room in Mammoth once and there was a bunch of homies inside and Colby Stevenson was like Quan, and then after that I think people kind of just
it stuck.
Yeah, people kind of just went with it, which is pretty funny. And I've actually been thinking about how I can like almost push away from the Quan thing because I like want to just I don't know if I'm like dead set on that one, but as time goes on, I think it fits pretty well.
Yeah. It's a great nickname, at least. It's dope. Quan.
Makes it easy. Plus, my name is Quinn, so it's pretty funny. Sometimes people will, like customer service people will answer the phone because my email is Quan.Wolferman.
Mr. So, Quan?
Yeah, so people will be like, hello, Quan. How can I help you today? It's super funny. I'm always like, yeah, what's going on? This is Quan for sure. You can call me that.
So next question is Nick Gosselin, who asks, probably an impossible question to answer, but wanted to know what your all-time favorite album is.
I would say one of my all-time favorite musical works of art is probably Mac Miller Faces because he put it out himself and just locked himself in his home studio and he put it out for free. He didn't get any money for it and I listened to that.
Was that his last one before he died?
No, his last album before he died, at least one to put that he put out while he was alive, was Swimming, which is a good album. And then they put out Circles after he had passed away. But while he was still alive, Faces. It was an hour and a half long mixtape, and I have it on vinyl now. But I listened to that 100,000 times over last fall. I would just put it on and go on walks with my headphones and just sit with myself and listen to that album. And he says so many like funny things, and just knowing that he made that for himself and nobody could really take it away from it. No labels, no one really had any control over it. It was just his, and he didn't make any money off it or anything. I thought that was super sick, and he had so many like sick features on it, like Mike Jones. He has Mike Jones on there. He's got Rick Ross on there. A couple other people that you wouldn't even really know, but they like really kill it. So as far as like all time, that's definitely one of them for sure. That
I'll have to go check that out.
It's long, but it's worth listening to front to back, and it's definitely a soundtrack that has helped me a lot and helped me like find my zone a little bit, because it's so long and there's so many different moods to it. And I'll probably listen to it after this just for some inspiration.
Dope. Then Raf Diaz asks, what's your best Slush Cup memory?
That's funny. Best Slush Cup memory? There's a couple of them, but I think like one that really like sticks in my mind was it was the night before I played Henrik, and I mean everybody else was done because there was only one more game to play, and it was Dolo and I, and everybody was kind of having some beers and hanging out, and for some reason I still wanted to like be a part of that. And so I was downstairs. I wasn't drinking, but I was downstairs and it was getting pretty late. And Emil Grambaum looked at me and he was like, what are you doing, dude? Go to bed. Like, you have a Slush game against Henrik tomorrow. Like, go to bed. And I was like, yeah, he's right. I gotta go. And so it's like a super small thing, but it was just like one of those moments where it was just like kind of like brought me back down to earth, you know. And I'm like glad that he said that, because it was probably like 11 and I was able to go get some good sleep still. But it was just like a random moment where it really always stuck with me, just like, you know, when you have something to like go do and try to accomplish, that you should probably, you know, even if there's something going on that seems fun in the moment. I'm definitely like a live in the moment type of person. Like literally every single like hour of the day, I'm nowhere but that hour, kind of, and it's kind of a blessing and a curse. But I think that definitely helped me rein it in a little bit and like think about how I should approach things from then on out. Like if there is something on the table that's like has that type of weight to it, then I should treat it as such as well and make sure I'm getting proper rest and proper mindset. But for favorite Slush Cup memory for real though, is someone had this huge vape one year, and it was like just like it was Steve Stepp, actually. He had like huge vape, and I was trying to get A-Hall to hit it for like 3 or 4 days, and he was like nah. Then finally, like the last day, I was like, come on, and then he just like took like this huge rip, and then like some vape like came out his nose, and then he just like died coughing, because A-Hall's just such a good kid and he like never really like does anything like bad, I feel like. So it was so funny to try to like peer pressure him for multiple days, and then he finally I have it on video still, and it's just like every time I watch it I get such a good laugh out of it. It was so funny.
Other one, Ryan Bruninghaus asks, were you the first one to do a backslide, back swap, front four? He says, first time I saw that trick done, it was a video of him at Copper. Just wondering if he saw someone do it before or if he got it never been done.
It's funny to like have a rail trick be like a call to never been done, because I feel like you just don't really know. And it's on like,
yeah, it's hard to know.
Such a small scale. I'm sure somebody had done it before me, but I remember Luke Van Valen, the announcer, was talking on Simon Dumont's podcast, and he like specifically was like he had mentioned that at that moment when I did that at Dutour, I did like a backslide back swap to switch in my run, and he talked about it on that podcast, and he was like, yeah, at that point I kind of knew that I was getting to be out of my element a little bit. I didn't know how to like call the tricks as much anymore, and so I definitely think odds that I did it first probably pretty low, but odds that I was the first person to do it on a stage where people maybe hadn't seen it quite yet was pretty high. I don't know about the front four out, I don't remember that one, but yeah, that was a good time, definitely. And I watched it catch on after that a lot. So, but the trick that I'm most proud of in like inventing was the like front side bio 810 out of rails. I did that at that super unknown that we had talked about when I was quite a bit younger, and then I didn't do it again till 2 years later, and then the next year Henrik did it and really stepped it up, and then Ferdy did it as well and stepped it up a lot with like a blunt grab, and so that was pretty cool.
That's such a gnarly spin.
I really like it.
It looks uninviting.
It's super inviting. It's super comfortable. The one I want to do really bad is I want to do that trick to the right, because I haven't seen anybody do the front bio 8 to the right. So if I find the right up rail for it, then I'll probably try to whip that one up eventually as well.
So Will Cameron asks as a challenge for me, which is to ask you tricks and see who comes up to mind when you think about them.
Okay.
Yeah, let's go simple. Like let's say you think of a dub backy.
T-Hall? Of course. T-Hall, dub backy, Japan. He's wearing a camo jacket, and there's like a big bridge in the background. I don't know what movie it was in. Maybe sometime around Believe, or maybe a little earlier, 2 years earlier. But it's just such a classic double backflip. And I mean, if you think dub back, I think T-Hall. I don't know about you, but...
I guess you're right. There's so many. I guess maybe some Adam DeLorme stuff.
Definitely some Adam DeLorme. I definitely think of Candide as well when I think of dub backs. I mean, he's so good at that trick as well, and goes so big a lot of times.
What about like something rail trick, like a 2-pretz 4? What's he like here? Who comes to mind if you think of a 2-pretz 4?
Probably Wallish.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the pretzel man. I think of like old 2-pretz 4s. If I think of 2-pretz 6s, though, I think of Wallish too, when he did those back-to-back 2-pretz 6s on the downrail. That was so crazy for the time, and it's still crazy. You know, people aren't like doing 2-pretz 6s on downrails. So I think
it's not as if it's common.
No, exactly. So 2-pretz 4, probably Wallish.
What about dub 9?
Ooh. If I think of dub Sev, I think of that dude Frey. Frey Jonsson, obviously. And then if I think of dub nines, I think of P White's alley-oop, like dub 9 in the QP, in the After Dark, I think. That was one of the craziest dub nines. And I also think of CeeLo did a dub 9 blunt somewhere in France, I think, that was like super blunted in Nepal.
Underflip a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I also think of Nikki Kiefer with the double taquito flip with the blunt.
Yeah.
That was
so good.
A crazy dub 9 as well.
I think my favorite of all time is Dane Tudor back in the days in Boys. Like he does a hand drag dub 9 in hood, but like so stylish.
Dude, straight up, I know exactly the one you're talking about. He's wearing a red t-shirt, and it's on the S Sammy Carlson Invitational jump, and he does like the fattest dub 9.
Okay, last one. Road 9 mute.
Oof. There's one Road 9 that Henrik did at Un Olsen Invitational with dub nose. That's like burnt into my brain.
Yeah.
And he's wearing like a acid wash blue tall tee hoodie. He does a Road 9 dub nose on the first years.
That's so rare.
al dente. Yeah,
you never see those.
And then I also think of Thane Rich because he does crazy road nines with blunt into pow. And he's so good at landing switch in the pow. So I definitely think of him. And then Rodeo 12, I think of Tim McChesney.
Yeah.
In his style video.
Yeah. I think last question will be from me. You mentioned it quickly. What's up with the al dente love?
I just can't stay away from it. That ski changed my life. It really changed my life. Like, I had skied a couple of different skis, and it was before I was ever even on Armada. They had like a end of the year sale the first year that ski went on sale, and I think it was more than half off. And my dad called me.
Like, was that 2013, 14?
That ski came out in 2013, I think. And I think Henrik wrote it in 2012, 2013, whatever. I don't know. I think 2014 is when it was out to the public. But yeah, it was like an end of the year sale, and I was kind of skiing on like a pretty beat up pair of skis, and my dad called and was like, "Hey man, like just got you a pair of 188 al dentes." And that was such a crazy moment because
188?
Yeah, I was like a teenager skiing on the 188 Idola, or it was the al dente at that point, but that's where the love started. I did my first nollie front two on that ski, and it changed my life. I'm not even kidding. I did one. And I was like, okay.
Because you were repping it at like X Games a year ago or 2 years ago, but repping the al dente.
And shout out to Hans, the president of Armada, because I asked him if that was okay if I skied an old ski at X, and he said, "Do they say Armada on them?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Cool."
Yeah, that's a thought I have. I was like, I'm wondering what Armada thinks of that.
They don't mind, I don't think. I mean, the ski still exists. So, but yeah, I just am obsessed with that ski. I was super upset though. The last pair I had mounted, I like first day was riding them. Did a two breaths too on the deck rail at Mammoth, the classic super long one, and I like swooped my pretz 2 off the noses, like nollied it, and it like put me straight into these trees on the side of the landing, and I literally just did a two pretz 2 and skied straight into a tree, and I snapped it, and that was the last pair I've had. And people are always hitting me up like, "Hey, can you help me get a pair of those OG al dentes?" And I'm like, "Dude, no way, those are for me, like those are it's my secret stash."
But didn't you have a picture with like 20 of them?
Yeah, that's the secret stash.
Okay, you have a stash.
It's not mine. I can't put my name on it. But
it's the Armada stash?
Yeah, it's secret. We got it in a vault somewhere in Europe. You'll never know. But
in a bunker.
Exactly. I'm sure Henrik would probably like to have a slice of those. But those are some of the last 188s they make, because that ski only comes in a 180 now. Which
the 188 is long.
Yeah, super long and so fun and just such a good ski. It's a lot of ski, but like even all last year I skied, every clip I got in the Deviate project was on a 192 White Walker.
Yeah, but that's pow, that's not park.
But that ski is still big. But
yeah, you need to, yeah.
It's almost, it is nice though. I mean, that was definitely a contributing factor of why I was able to land a lot of my tricks, is because that ski is so solid.
Thanks a lot for doing this, Quan.
Yeah,
really enjoyed it. To close off, what's the plan in the coming months? Are you going back at it with Deviate?
Yeah, back at it with Deviate. I chose a word for the year, which I think I may have mentioned to you earlier, but the word that I just came to mind for 2023 was freedom. I don't know why, it just kind of came to me. So I think this year I'm just going to try to let myself have as much freedom as I can and grow, because I think it's kind of a growing year. Last year I had a lot of just motivation to say something, and this year I think I'm kind of in a learning year again. Going to go out with Sammy a bunch, try to get in the heli with him. So I'm going to be filming for Sammy's project, which was a huge honor for him to ask me about that. And then
on his yearly videos.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So hopefully I'll have some, or I will I will have some insano shots for Sammy's project. And then, yep, back in with Deviate, and then going to try to film a, probably like have a 10-day slot with Hot Laps as well. And I think we're going to try to go do some follows and also do a bunch of follows and also get some cinematography, like nice shots as well, because he's got super nice cameras. But that's kind of the plans for this year, is Deviate, Sammy, and then a little monster project with Hot Laps as well.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah, it's nothing's quite set in stone yet, but that's just how it goes. You got to go where the snow goes. So
yeah, let's go.
Yes, let's go.
And a little Kimbo Sesh to finish it off.
Yeah, Kimbo Sesh plus Armada Week. So I mean, the two week trip to Sweden, and it never feels long enough. You know.
Yeah.
Every time I'm there, I'm like, how is this over? I want this to keep going. So definitely looking forward to that.
Yeah. Well, hope everything goes well for the rest of the season. And thanks a lot for doing this.
X, thank you. Appreciate it, bro.
Thanks, man. Cheers. All right.
Talk soon.
So this is it for episode 38 with Quinn Wolferman. Big thanks to the sponsors once again. Armada Skis, Planks Clothing, Dick Hands Restaurants, and Axis Board Shop. Also, big thanks to the patrons on Patreon. If you want to join, check it out at patreon.com/themerrandpodcast. Peace!